This is the best of two pros and a cup of Joe with LeVar Arrington, Brady Quinn, and Jonas Knox on Fox Sports Radio.
Somebody tried to warn you this was going to happen in the NFL, and we will tell you who that is coming up here in just a couple of moments from now. It is two pros and a cup of Joe. It's LeVar Arrington. It's Brady Quinn. It's Jonas Knox with you here on Fox Sports Radio. You can hang out with us, as always, on the iHeartRadio app and on hundreds of Fox Sports Radio affiliates, wherever you are, making us a part of your Monday morning. We appreciate you doing so. We're going to take you all the way up until 9 a.m. Eastern time, 6 gosh. O'clock Pacific, right here on Fox Sports Radio.
Coming in.
LeVar Arrington is doing his Vince McMahon impersonation.
Fire!
So if you ever hear this throughout the course of the show, you're fired! LeVar is on a Monday morning.
Coming in
Brady
hot,
Quinn.
Brady.
I love it, though. I love it.
Oh, my God.
He's fired up. I barely have a voice after this past weekend, so we'll see how today goes.
And rightfully so.
Yeah.
Golden Domer showed up.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know that it was so much about the game, let alone Chicago afterwards. Chicago's undefeated, by the way. I'm not talking about the Bears.
Yeah,
not the Bears.
No, the place.
Chicago, the city. Yeah.
Well, you know what? I'm so jealous of that. Like, you said a whole lot with so little.
It pisses me off.
I'm a tad bit. Yeah. Good for you, Brady. Good for you.
It's good for him. Screw him. Why couldn't we go?
I can go into my mental Rolodex of memories and experiences. Good for you, Brady.
Yeah. Thanks, man. I appreciate it, guys. I really do. I did miss you, though. And by the way, I'll keep saying this everywhere we go. People keep talking about this show.
Yeah,
there's a lot to talk about today, but I did miss you out there.
All right.
Now, when they're talking about this show, what specifically are they talking about?
Brady, you, LeVar, and that guy. Like,
That James guy.
This guy.
That guy?
He's pretty good. What's with the wiggle your ears? What's with that line?
I mean, listen, nobody rides coattails like I do. I've told it. I'm not ashamed of it. I will continue to ride
same,
you guys'
bro.
Coattails.
I'm
out
on
here.
Brady's.
Yeah, tell me.
Like a mug.
Yeah, that's yes. All right. So somebody on this show was trying to tell people, and I believe it was LeVar, and I thought this was ridiculous, that LeVar was trying to say on Friday. Remember this, Brady? LeVar was trying to say that maybe the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are looking ahead to next week because they've got that big matchup with the Patriots in Foxborough.
I didn't say that.
That sounded
LeVar
more
Arrington,
like
man.
The person was formerly Chucky at Chuck E. Cheese. It sounded like it was that individual.
I did not say that.
In all seriousness, though, man, did the Rams whoop that ass. Like that was an ugly, ugly game for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Tom Brady. And Matt Stafford and company were dealing. They were throwing deep. And it looked like everything we kept hearing about as far as the ceiling for this team with Matt Stafford playing at a high level, it played out in L.A. yesterday.
I will say, I did say the L.A. Rams are the best team in the NFC West. I do believe I recall saying that.
It's debatable.
I don't know that it's debatable after yesterday.
I mean, we can pull the tape on that. But
you can take it, Brady, but I'm just saying, I just thought I'd make sure I led into this with what you're saying. We'll just be clear that retrospectively, I do believe I said that the Rams are. Now, there were a lot of questions surrounding them, of course, with their running back situation, some questions along the offensive front. But I said their defense is phenomenal. And if Matthew Stafford can bring what he brings to the table like people think he can, they'd be a pretty serious team. I think we learned a lot yesterday.
They're the best team in the NFL right now. I don't think you can look at it any other way based on what they've done so far. And last night was an example of, you know, look, they're the best team in the NFL right now. The question is, because we saw this happen last year, okay? The Saints blew out the Bucs twice.
True.
And then when it mattered most, Tom Brady and the Bucs.
Right.
That's what I'm more concerned by. Like, I don't know how you guys feel. When I see a team that feels like they're already peaking and it's week three in the NFL, or they look that good and it's week three, I'm thinking, well, it can only go down from here. Like, they can only suffer more injuries. They can only have, you know, those ebbs and flows of, okay, what is this offense going to look like with Matt Stafford? How is it going to be different? Eventually, defenses will adjust. So that's more of my concern, I think, with the Rams is they are the best team in the NFL. right now, but will that be the case for the rest of the season? Probably not.
I think that defense is too impressive to not hold them in that high of esteem. Even if the offense is having a rough day, that defense travels. And they have so many players. And you can see, you know, the one thing you can see with this Rams, team as a whole, is it, they got a nasty attitude. They have a nasty mentality. You can tell they're just some arrogant SOBs about what they do on that field. And I love it. I love it. You can tell along the defensive front, they give zero Fs. You could tell in the linebacking core, zero Fs. Secondary, way more zero Fs. And now you're seeing guys emerge from the receiving core. You know, you would have thought Cup would have been doing something. We had a DeSean Jackson. We had the DeSean Jackson spotting. I mean, he had a major play, big play during the course of this game. And Matthew Stafford delivered in the clutch. That's all I really needed to know. That's what I really needed to see. Could Matthew Stafford be big in a big game? Because he had not been in big games so much in Detroit. Maybe a couple here and there. My bad. And I know Profet is in here right
listen,
now. Maybe not so much in Detroit. But this was as big a game as he's been in his career. And he's stepped up.
I mean, can we wait until hour two before we perform an autopsy on the Lions while they're still breathing?
I mean, are they still breathing?
I mean, because Justin Tucker just knifed them yesterday in Detroit.
Are they still breathing?
Hey, what do you think DeSean Jackson runs a 40 in right now? Right now, what do you think he runs a 40 in? Sub 4.5?
I will put DeSean Jackson throughout the rest of his life as the fastest player in the NFL. At his age, I've never seen a guy who gets behind.
Green.
I'm just saying.
Darryl Green is a fast dude still today.
I'll put him up against anyone because I think DeSean Jackson at 77 is still getting behind a secondary.
Wait a second. Wait, can we get covered? Is Darryl Green 77 years old?
I was being funny.
Jesus. Okay.
I played with D. Green. I mean, he played 20 years or so, 20 or more, but I played with D. Green. But D. Green probably still runs a 4.440 right now.
All right, so it was yesterday more about the L.A. Rams who came in just playing at a high level and the best team in the league, or did Tampa Bay show something that maybe we should be concerned with?
I thought Todd Bowles' defense got a little exposed. I mean, if there's not a pass rush, that secondary is going to struggle.
Yeah, that became evident. You know, I don't think that they were the biggest team in question yesterday. I thought that was Kansas City.
Yeah.
You know, but for me, looking at the Tampa Bay game, I got to be honest with you. I don't get major concerns about Tampa Bay this early in the season. If they take a loss, they take a loss. That's just where I'm at with them. They were competitive. Tom Brady did some good things. He did some not so good things. I mean, that's you generally expect Tom Brady-led teams to start off slow. Early season, they might not come out as red hot as people may expect or want them to be. So for me, I don't look at this as an indictment on them in terms of what their season's going to be. As Brady mentioned earlier, they took some ass kickings early on from New Orleans last season.
Yep.
You know, there was a point, if people recall, there was a point in time where they were like, is Bruce Arians and Tom Brady on the same page? They seem to be, you know, having their differences, and Bruce Arians said this, had this to say about Tom Brady, and da-da-da. Man, look here, and all they did was keep going. Keep improving as the season went on, and we know how it all ended. So I don't look at Tampa as one of those teams where I'd say right now I would have any type of trepidation about what their success level will be moving forward.
And also, they lost to the Rams last year, if you remember. That was Jared Goff at the Jared Goff era with the LA Rams, which, by the way, I still feel bad for him. Like, every time I see the Rams do something good and people think, man, this team, they're a legitimate Super Bowl team, I still feel bad for Jared Goff.
Why?
Because I think Sean McVay threw him under the bus.
How many Super Bowls you playing, Brady?
None.
Me too. He's collectively, between the two of
us,
he has more Super Bowl. And you, how many did you go to?
None.
Okay, so he's got more Super Bowl appearances than all of us.
Yeah.
put together.
Yeah.
I don't feel sorry for him.
So you don't feel because he made a Super Bowl. Okay. Yes. That's interesting.
I get what he's saying. But let me just say this. As beautiful as that stadium was, and there was – I was proud of the L.A. fan base. Like, they showed up. They showed out. It was loud. It seemed like it was a great environment. There's just one thing wrong, okay? For as beautiful as the stadium as it is, if those receivers have to look back up into the ceiling or into the roof of the building, it seems like there's a bit of an issue finding the football.
Mm.
And I don't know if it was on Deshaun. I think it was a throw downfield to Deshaun Jackson. There was a couple times where you could tell they were having a hard time locating the football off the ceiling or off the roof.
Mm.
So that's going to be something to keep an eye on moving forward. As beautiful as the stadium is, I don't know that they took into account
how sunny it is, huh?
Yeah. The way it's shaped and how the ball looks coming down. It looked like it was a little bit of an issue last night.
Or they're going to have to get used to doing it, and then that gives them a home field advantage. I mean,
true.
You know, however you want to take it. But listen, when you look at Tampa, And you look at how this game went. You know, the one thing that I'll say is, yes, they did beat them last year, but last year was the beginning. That was an introductory period for Tom Brady to Tampa and Tampa to Tom Brady, and this ushering in of a new era of mentality. This is a different season. This is, you got that season under your belt. You're the returning world champions. You knocked off the juggernaut of Kansas City in the Super Bowl. You brought everyone back. Everyone. Yep. Coaching staff and players, yep. Personnel. Everyone's back. And you played against a team that lost double digits in coaching staff that has moved on. They lost both their running backs. They lost their center. They have dealt with injuries, and they came out there and they played well. So to me, I think that this is more about the Rams in this situation than it is about Tampa Bay, because Tampa Bay is a legitimate, formidable, perennial contender. That was not fluky, and it was so much grit in that game. And the way that they were able to methodically move up and down the field, the way they were able to execute on defense, they out-toughed them. They outsmarted them, and they outplayed them, and that's different. That's different than last year. So you got to actually look at this Rams team, and you got to ask yourself the question that Brady posed earlier. Are they peaking, or is this their regular ascent to where it is that they're going? If this is an ascent and them not getting close to like a place where you're like, okay, they're hitting they're leveling off, it's pretty scary what this team could possibly be.
Be sure to catch live editions of Two Pros and a Cup of Joe with Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, and Jonas Knox weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We are sitting here talking a ton of NFL, and we are talking all about what happened on Sunday Night Football, the Rams' dominant performance, the mess that is the Chicago Bears. We would be remiss if we didn't mention something else that took place in the city of Chicago this past weekend, and that was Brady Quinn and his Notre Dame Golden Domers, baby. We did it, guys. We did it. I mean, we laid the hammer. We did lay the hammer to the Wisconsin Badgers. Penn State opened them up, and Notre Dame finished them off on a Saturday.
Penn State struggled with them boys and could have lost. Notre Dame, y'all manhandled them.
Well, I mean, I think, look, here's the interesting thing about that game. There were so many times you're going, they can't have this many more guys get knocked down and injured. I mean, they're already playing with their third-string left tackle. There's third-string Will linebacker. They had Tyler Buckner, who's kind of come in as their backup quarterback to give a different look. He couldn't play. I knew that going into the game, couldn't say it. Jack Cohn gets knocked out of the game, and then my guy Drew Pine comes in and absolutely starts slinging it. I think as a Notre Dame alum, you've really got to be impressed with what Brian Kelly's done. Mm-hmm. Like he has been a model of consistency there. He's dealt with a lot of change throughout college football, from the BCS era where they made it to a national championship game, the college football playoff. They've made it a couple times now. Just the rigors that come along with recruiting to that specific place. And then all the change, even on his staff, like knowing and being able to have that calm, steady hand where their defense didn't look good the first couple of weeks. But the last two, you're going, okay, now we understand why he wanted to go with Marcus Freeman. Now we're starting to see this defense settle in. And so I just think, you know, he obviously got his 106th win, which was the big storyline because he passes Newt Rockne for the all-time winningest coach in Notre Dame history. So it was a big deal. It was a big moment. But, man, that stadium, I wish you guys could have been there. That atmosphere, it was incredible. You know, they had it – they had it divided where from each 50 over, you had Wisconsin on one side, Notre Dame on the other. You had the student bodies right there in each end zone. The bands, just the entire atmosphere. And the city was buzzing, too, because the Ryder Cup was only 90 minutes away. You had a lot of people going to the Ryder Cup, coming back and forth. The Cardinals were in town playing the Cubs. The Sox, the White Sox just clinched the division. That town was hopping. It was one of the coolest weekends I've ever spent in my life, whether it was around Notre Dame or even professionally.
And also,
give us a little bit more detail on that.
I mean,
give us a little bit more color on that. What do you mean?
And also, that was before the city of Chicago realized that they still don't have an offense.
Right.
That was before.
By the way, I did leave the city of Chicago before that game took place.
Good for you. I mean, in downtown Chicago, when you're walking around Rush Street, not that you partook in any of this stuff, but were there Notre Dame fans just hanging out in droves around the street there?
Of course. I mean, there was a bunch of different events for the university. You know, a lot of donor bases that were there
I
was asked to go speak at a couple of different events. It wasn't anything crazy. We don't have like this young, crazy donor base. It's more of there's some old money, some really, really, really big money. So you got to kind of mind your P's and Q's with some of that. Yeah.
Oh,
interesting.
That was a very subdued.
Yeah.
Here's the reality.
That was kind of like a miss.
Jonas put me on the spot.
He did.
When I told him beforehand, I was like, it was kind of a tame, you know, time for the most part. Not great for radio, but like any good former Chuck E. Cheese mouse, he then just said on live radio, let's get some stories. I was like, I don't really have any for you.
Okay.
So I'm not really sure what to tell you.
So what establishments did you go to? Like, did you go to Gibson's? Did you have a steak at Gibson's?
Yeah, of course.
Now, and I'm assuming, there was probably a line out the door to get into Gibson's. Now, how many people came up to you and tried to get an autograph or tried to get a picture with Brady Quinn? How many people did that?
I don't know. There was a good amount. But the Gibson's, Tavern Rush, we hit up those two spots. Maple and Ash, which is a great
Maple
spot right
Ash.
There too, and then Dublin's, which is the local watering hole.
It
if
is,
you will.
And by the way, Dublin's is the most uncomfortable bar setup because you always feel like you don't have enough room. But for whatever reason, it just feels it's really close to the front door, so you gotta literally belly up to the bar and just get hammered. Slamming back drinks there, LeVar.
Very interesting,
but again,
Jonas.
But you know, LeVar and I were doing a you know.
I work
show
on
prep.
A curfew, so I don't you know.
Yeah,
I don't do those things. I don't partake. That's why I was hoping for some fantasy material from you know Brady.
And LeVar and I were doing practice shows. You know, we were doing a lot of research for the show, just doing practice shows, simulations, things like that to make sure that we were ready to go. But you know, I mean, Brady Quinn's in Chicago gallivanting around town as the Notre Dame great.
Minding his P's and Q's.
And listen, I got to give you credit. I know there's footage of you, you know, pumping your fist, excited about a Notre Dame play, but you seem like you kept it as professional as possible. Like you seem like everything was, you're there to call a game. You're no longer playing.
Well, okay, so that's the difference is I'm not calling the game. I am on a pregame show. So I think it's a little more tolerable to let your bias show because I'm not up there calling the game from both sides of it.
Right.
I'm still analyzing it. But in that moment, no, you have to understand, I've known Drew Pine and his family for a while. His dad played football with my uncle back at Brown. And so there's a lot to the backstory of why he picked the number 10, wanting to go to Notre Dame. And so when he got in, and that was actually after the Kevin Austin touchdown, the second one, where he came in and hit him across the middle. I was so happy for the young man. I mean, very similar to what Ian Book kind of went through when he was there. He was a little bit overlooked by some of the other quarterbacks. And then finally, when he got his shot, he seized it. He played well. I kind of feel like Drew Pine, even though it was a part of that quarterback competition, you know, there's something about being a gamer. There's something about when the lights turn on, going to the game scenario, being able to go in there and deliver. And Drew Pine did that. So I was just so proud of him, happy for him, just knowing that feeling. And you probably didn't see the touchdown celebration because I don't think they showed it. But after he tossed that thing, he turned and he did that Conor McGregor walk to the sideline. That was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Dude.
Yeah, I did.
Did he wear number 10 because of you? Be honest.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Wow. Look at that.
So, knowing the whole backstory, it was a really, really cool moment. The first pass he threw when he went in, and he scrambled out and threw the ball across his body and hit Avery Davis for a big gain. I was like going, okay, like, this is a little different. Like, this is kind of what we've been hoping for, to provide a little spark to the offense. So, just taking all that into account, it was a cool moment.
Did you like the white stripes?
I didn't mind them. I think there's some history behind that.
Right,
so
of course.
I didn't mind them. I mean, look, I was down there talking to Kevin Plank for Under Armour.
Oh, nice.
He's the one who designed them, so obviously I'm not going to say anything bad about it. But
shouts out to KP.
I was just going to say, he's a cool dude.
Yeah,
I enjoyed
good dude.
Spending some time with him.
Real good dude.
By the way, Mertz is terrible, right? I mean, like I'm not speaking out of turn when I say that. Graham Mertz is terrible.
Well, I think they've got three issues. Their offense is one in which it doesn't allow them to do anything in the run game and build off of that in the passing game.
Mm.
Like, anything they run or they do, and I'm sure LeVar can speak to this as a defender, it's like, if you have a boot, if you have a play action pass, if you have like a move the pocket and a screen off of that same personnel, that same formation, it's really hard for the defense to get a beat, right? Because they're like, well, in this personnel formation, they do six different things.
Correct.
So they don't do any of that. Like, so you watch it and
there's
you go,
a lot
okay.
of coaches that don't do it. They don't.
Right.
Why is that such a hard concept to grasp? What you just said. I don't understand why that's such a hard concept to grasp. Run, like, it's the do six things 100 times. Not do 100 things six times. Run the same formation and have variations. Move to a different formation and have the different variations and the different wrinkles. Like, everything sets something else up. And that's the reason why it works. If you're just running a random motion, nobody cares about your random motion.
Right.
If your play calling doesn't have some type of connection to, okay, man, they pulled the guard. But they went the opposite direction. Oh, man, they ran an RPO to the opposite side of where the guard pulled. Like, I'm trying to figure out, why are you pulling the guard to the opposite side? It serves no purpose, right?
Right.
It does serve a purpose. For when the moment in time, like, you think about that play where they were able to access the edge in the San Francisco Green Bay game. Because they did it the way that they did it and the way they were running and setting things up, Trent Williams gets a one-on-one with a cornerback because they were able to outflank them. Trey Lance walks into the end zone, which, by the way, Trent destroyed, obliterated that cornerback. It was one of the best blocks I've seen. But I don't understand that, Brady. Like, can you please explain to me why coaches don't grasp that concept that you just laid out?
I think the reason why they don't is because they get to other plays where – They try to watch film and say, well, we know exactly what you're going to play if we put this personnel grouping and this formation out there. And so instead of building a lot off of like one specific thing, they have all this other stuff they want to get to. So that's I think part of it.
So that's why their play sheets be so gosh darn big. It's like, we can win the rep with this play. It's
right.
not, let's
right.
set it up with this play, go to the next variation, go
well,
to the
yeah,
next variation.
I'll put it this way. If you as a linebacker on third down, if you know you can do something where if you line up between the guard and center or at the end of the line of scrimmage and you know how we're going to adjust with our pass protection, you understand how to better rush then, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that's the thing. It's just all about predictability. Now,
but I'm a setup guy, though. I'm a set, like – First time out, I don't care what is what, unless you force me to have to do something different with like a pooler. I'm giving you straight speed, all 100 gas, and then I'm going to work from there. Now I'm going to show you, okay, I'm faster than you. Then generally, my next setup is I'm going to bull rush you. So I'm going to push you upfield with my speed, and then I'm going to bull you. From there, you is he going to try to run past me? Is he going to use strength on me? Well, whatever it is, I'm either going to have my club and rip ready to go, I'm going to wiper your hands, I'm going to push you upfield and come back underneath you. If you're a chopper, I'm going to jump you. I'm going to leapfrog you because I know you only have one recourse. Once I start setting you up, okay, I got you running upfield because you know I'm fast. Oh, I got you trying to get upfield, but you're anchoring because you think I can bull rush you. That's generally how offenses should be thinking as well. Like, let me show you this so you're paying attention to this. Then I'm going to show you that. Because I'm going to make sure you're paying attention to that too. And then I'm going to start bringing wrinkles off of what it is that I'm doing. So as a defender in a much smaller scale, we're doing, if you're a pretty talented or pretty, you know, thoughtful person that's playing defense, you're 100% disguising and setting up and doing different things that you can add wrinkles off of with what it is that you're doing.
Sure. But so here's how the defense or offense looks at a little bit different. So when you come into the game, it's more like a boxing match. And the first few rounds, you're really
feeling out.
Yeah. I mean, you might throw some haymakers because you're coming out there showing personnel and formations and groupings that you're not only searching for information to see how you're going to play it, but you're also, if you get the look that you think you're going to get, you should be very successful early on in that game. Like, that's mm-hmm. one of the reasons why you practice your, they call them starters, right? You have 15 plays that you script out and you practice. And so at the beginning of the game, those first drives, they should be successful based on what we've seen on film and how we're preparing, if we're getting the looks that we're preparing for. Now, once you get into the game, as you said, you know, you're going to see some different looks or variations from the defense, but the reality is, you can only do so much as a defense, right? There's only so many different ways you play man, only so many different ways you play zone.
That's right.
And so once the offense gets a feel then for exactly how you're playing or matching up with this guy or playing this formation, that's then when we start to make adjustments mm-hmm. because our Rolodex of plays is much bigger than what a defense can
Indeed.
Do.
Indeed.
So that's why it's a little different. And so just to kind of swing all the way back to Wisconsin is – it's hard for them because they're not doing anything overly well on a consistent basis. So it makes it hard for a play caller. You know, Graham Mertz struggles. Now, I don't know that he's put in the best position to succeed. They don't have a running back that was like Jonathan Taylor, where when he gets a little opening, gone.
Yeah,
he's gone. Like, they don't have that player in their backfield. They've got a quarterback who tends to struggle after his first read. If his first read's not there, he struggles. And so that makes it hard for a play caller. That makes it hard for you to have any sort of consistent, you know, ability to throw the football. Or if you don't play perfectly and run the football well, to rely on him. But so all those things being said, I couldn't get over how many pick sixes that was. That was in like a short amount of time. Because people kept asking me, like, hey, what do you think this week? What do you think this week? I was like, I don't know. It's probably going to be a low-scoring game. Like, the spread was weird because Wisconsin coming off a bye, and they hadn't beat anyone. They were 1-1. They're coming off a bye, and they're a 6.5-point favorite. I'm like, gosh, that's really weird. You know, and I know Notre Dame's had their struggles, but they're 3-0. And it's a neutral site. So I'm thinking to myself, like, this is odd. If my betting advice to people was, like, don't mess with it because it's a weird number. But the under, which was a 10-3 at half, that looked like a shoe-in.
Yeah.
And then you saw this explosion in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. I'm not endorsing the use of narcotics. I just wouldn't be surprised if somebody who had bet the under on that game started to take a stroll down narcotic lane after that one, because that's a brutal loss. You know, that's a frustrating way to go. You know, I mean, you think you got the whole game played out, and then next thing you know, it's a pick six party, and all of a sudden you're starting to sweat out the over-under in that game. That's rough.
Very interesting.
Yeah, I just feel bad for him.
Well, you weren't sweating it out. That thing was over and done with before the game was over.
Be sure to catch live editions of Two Pros and a Cup of Joe with Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, and Jonas Knox weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I know you guys are excited. Another Monday Night Football matchup we got coming up later on tonight. And it is time, though, that we get into that and we set the stage with a little something we do on the show, and it's called this.
Here to feed your degenerate gambling soul. The Prop Bet Monster.
Sucker. My name is
Eagles at Cowboys.
That's right. We got an NFC East matchup on Monday Night Football, guys. Let's get it started here. And we will get started hot with Brady Quinn with a one-point lead in the Prop Bet Monster season standing. So here we go. We do this for all the primetime games, the Thursday and the Monday Night games. So here we go. Week three finishing up here. First Cowboys rushing touchdown. Your options are
This is good.
Ezekiel Elliott.
Okay.
Tony Pollard or Dak Prescott?
I like it.
Oh,
I like
okay.
it.
Okay. I think it's going to be Zeke. I think they like to kind of ground and pound when he's in the game. That's the area of the field where he's most special.
I'm going to go with Dak Prescott.
Ooh, okay. So all the love Tony Pollard's gotten lately, you guys are just going to kick him in the balls
like
that?
It's actually going to end up being Tony Pollard.
Yeah,
but since we're prop betting it, I'm going to just go out on a limb.
Interesting. I just, you know, all the love.
It ain't going to be Zeke.
I mean, Tony Pollard's getting a lot of love all over the country. Not on this show. You guys kick him in the nuts like that
and
refuse to choose him.
Okay, I'm changing. I'm going to go with Tony Pollard.
Okay, there it is, folks.
I'll go with Tony Pollard.
Now, we'll put an asterisk next to that because if Dak Prescott ends up scoring the first rushing
touchdown. Did you see what I just did?
Yeah.
Did you guys see what my technique was?
It's interesting.
Yeah. All right.
Good for you.
I just picked two without picking two.
That's all right.
But I'm going to settle in with Tony Pollard because
wait, so I can't take Dak now? I actually like the Dak pick.
Okay. Yeah, let's switch up.
What are we doing here?
We're switching up.
Okay, Brady, are you taking Dak or what?
No, I'll stick with Zeke.
All right.
I'm going to go with Tony Pollard.
So next up here, does Brady Quinn get his buddy Nick Sirianni on the show tomorrow? And the options are no or all of the above.
I'm going to go with all of the above.
That's a good pick there, LeVar.
I'm also going to go with all of the above.
Yeah.
Because I don't know exactly what it means, but I feel like that's the safe play here.
Yeah, that's
safe.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know, it feels like
that's a safe play.
All of the above.
I mean, you know, like you and Nick Sirianni have a good relationship. I figured by now maybe we could get him on, but, you know, not us.
I'm not trying to, you know, burn any bridges.
Are you embarrassed to bring some of your famous friends around LeVar and myself? And notably,
how about you rephrase this question? Remove LeVar's name from it. And just
screw you. All right, here we go. Next up, what does Jalen Hurts do first tonight? Complete a pass, run for positive yards, throw an incomplete pass, or get sacked?
Incomplete pass, easily.
Okay.
Oh.
That's the first thing he'll do.
I'm going to say complete a pass. I think it could be a screen, could be something simple, maybe an RPO. So I'm going to say complete a pass.
All right. Next up here, what Cowboys incident happens first? Jerry Jones shown on TV, Dak Prescott with a turnover, Ezekiel Elliott with a fumble, or Skip Bayless follows anybody on Twitter?
They're at home.
Yes.
Ugh. Do the options again.
Yeah, what was Skip?
Jerry Jones on TV, Dak Prescott with a turnover, Zeke with a fumble, or Skip Bayless following anybody on Twitter?
I'm going with Skip Bayless.
Yeah. Doesn't he follow all of them anyway?
No, he doesn't follow anybody.
I'm going with Skip Bayless, and he's going to have a comment for the game.
Okay. Oh, so you think Skip's going to actually break his streak and follow somebody on Twitter? That's what you're going with.
Yes.
All right, you know we're not playing with real money, right?
I know. Like,
you're not
winning.
That's
the whole point.
You're not winning any significant amount of money. Okay.
Yeah, that's right. The point.
I'm going to go with Jerry Jones. Because the other two, I think there's only two plays here. It's Skip or it's Jerry Jones. I'm going to go with Jerry Jones.
All right. Interesting. Very good.
I like that one.
All right. So you remember when Philadelphia won the Super Bowl in 2017, 2018?
I mean, it's their only one.
Yeah. It's, yeah. You know, just and there was an incident that took place. Well, I mean, there was an incident that took place after the Super Bowl, and that leads me to this prop bet for the game coming up tonight, and we will finish off with this. If Philly wins, does video surface of an Eagles fan eating horse crap off the street again?
I'm going to say yes.
All right. You're unbelievable.
I'm also going to say yes.
Okay,
I'm also going to say yes.
So you guys, there's no faith in humanity with the Eagles
fans?
This is you think
a
they
huge
haven't outgrown
game.
That? All right.
The winner of this is in the driver's seat in the NFC East. All right, these are the top two teams in the NFC East. The winner of this is in the driver's seat. I think the fans in Philly know how big a win would be. If they can get a win tonight.
Very good.
And it would be horse S if they lost to Eagles
is.
Fans. So if they were to win, they would eat that horse S and say that we own this horse S.
All right, that's disturbing.
Yeah, there you
all
go.
Right.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.